This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, HBO's series about the Showtime Lakers has been criticized for how it portrays some key figures. But beyond that, is it any good? Allison Herman from The Ringer and Jordan Liggins from the Spinsters podcast join me to discuss Winning Time. And later, Sports Illustrated senior writer Howard Beck speaks with NBA legend Dirk Nowitzki about his first time in SI. But first, opening day is here, and we have everything you need to know about the new season on our Major League Baseball Roundtable with SI staffers Tom Verducci, Stephanie Apstein, and Matt Martell. It's April 6th. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Major League Baseball is coming back. Within the last few minutes, ESPN reports MLB owners and the league's Players Association have reached a tentative agreement on a new labor deal.
I have to say, I am genuinely thrilled to be able to say that Major League Baseball's back and we're going to play 162 games.
Major League Baseball's opening day is finally upon us, and to discuss it, we have SI's Baseball Brain Trust here, writers Tom Verducci, Stephanie Apstein, and editor Matt Martell. Gang, welcome to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So this offseason was all about labor strife and the lockout and the CBA and very little about baseball. And so I'm wondering, Stephanie, because you were at so many different clubs for spring training and you got to talk to fans and players, do you think baseball hurt itself with the offseason it had?
I think baseball hurt itself less than I expected it to. And I think that because they're going to get in a full season, fans don't really care. I think if they had lost games, this would be a huge problem. But at the moment, really the only people being inconvenienced by this are the people involved in the sport who have to cram 162 games into a 155-game schedule. The fans I ran into at spring training, at least, were just happy to be there. The changes in the CBA, they don't think really affect them. So I think only the most hardcore of people care that much about what happened, and those people probably aren't going anywhere. I guess we'll see down the road if attendance is down and if viewership is down, but at least for the people who were at spring training, those people are seem to be pretty happy to have the sport back.
Yeah, and you mentioned like cramming an entire season into a shorter window. Matt, how does the lockout impact the schedule? I know that the Philadelphia Phillies, as everybody who listens to this program knows, I am contractually obligated to mention my hometown, Philadelphia, every time we do the show, but they play 13 straight days to start the season. So what kind of impact will that have on some of these teams?
It's hard to say exactly how it's going to impact certain teams. It might come down to who plays the Orioles the most and at what time of the year. So the schedule is going to be changed. You're going to have opening day with the Yankees and the Red Sox. So there could be certain matchups that you wouldn't typically see early in the year. Later in the year, you're going to be cramming. Off days are going to be a little bit different. But the schedule is going to be different, and it's going to be a grind, as Steph was saying.
You very tacitly threw some shade at the Orioles there, which I love. And that's something that I want to bring up with you, Tom, that part of the conversation when the lockout was happening was about how to improve competitive balance. And we've seen some teams this offseason, the A's particularly, the Reds as well, sell off some players. And roughly a fifth of the league looks like it's content just to keep cutting payroll. And a former colleague of mine and a friend, Mike Bauman from The Ringer, pointed out that the Ottawa Senators, who are this irrelevant small market hockey franchise, will be spending more on payroll this season than about 20% of Major League Baseball teams. So I'm wondering, in your estimation, how big a problem this is for baseball when we look at competitive balance and some of these teams deciding, yeah, we're good as is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it's really a problem when you have teams that decide for 5 or 6 years, we're not even going to try to win. And they think that's a good strategy. If you're a fan, you just love the game of baseball, you can't abide by that, right? So we don't want that situation. But the fact is, there's always losing teams. There always will be. For every other win, there has to be another loss. And we're seeing that this age is not that different. I mean, last year we had 11 teams win 90 or more games. And the team that won the World Series wasn't one of them. That was the Braves. They had 88.
Yeah.
So I think in the aggregate, yeah, I think competitive balance is actually pretty good around baseball right now. I mean, I think right now you could probably write off at the max, I'd say 9 or 10 teams that don't have a shot at the postseason. So say 20 or 21 teams competing for 12 playoff spots. That's not terrible. I think baseball is in a pretty good shape in terms of competitive balance. I will say, and Steph brought up a good point here, if we lost games on this season, that would have been disastrous. But I do think there's a price to pay for the lockout. There's no runway leading up to this season.
Obviously, the lockout played a part here. But is this lack of buzz about baseball just sort of an accumulation of things over the years? What has happened with baseball where, you know, it's America's pastime? But there hasn't been a lot of talk about baseball, except for there was the labor negotiation. And now, as Tom said, oh, all of a sudden, baseball's starting again.
Yeah, I think society changed a lot and baseball didn't change a lot except to get slower. So the inverse of a good product these days in the entertainment world is what baseball has been doing. And that is giving people less action over a longer period of time. That's just a terrible formula. Now, I think there's things in place now to change that. And I think baseball's got a real opportunity to turn a corner starting with this season. But yeah, baseball fell behind because society just changed so much. And it is the attention economy. We only have so much attention to give, and there's so many things vying for it. Baseball's not really event oriented. I mean, the biggest thing that happened last year, in my opinion, for baseball was the Field of Dreams game. It was unbelievable. It was eye candy on your television.
We've kept our promise. Major League Baseball has kept its promise. The dream's still alive. There's probably just one question to answer. Is this heaven? I don't think I heard you. Is this heaven? Yes, it is.
It was an event. You know, when you play 162 games, 30 teams, there's not too many tentpole events in the course of a baseball season like you're going to get with the NFL with one game a week.
So about that, you had mentioned baseball thinking about this, trying to address some of these issues. Stephanie, do you think any of the changes that baseball made during the offseason will help on that front? I mean, we've got the universal DH happening, expanded postseason. I know that there was the memo that was sent out about sticky substances, which, you know, I like, if you're not cheating, you ain't trying. What do we think here?
I think it's all a start. I actually think the the change that's going to mean the most is limiting the number of pitchers on the roster. We're not going to see that until May, because the way that the lockout affected pitchers' ramp-ups, as Tom was saying, the games are going to be terrible, and it's in part because the players are not totally ready for the season. Since they weren't sure when the season was going to start, a lot of them did not ramp up appropriately. It's like some of them were saying, you know, they thought it was going to go till May, and so they just weren't really ready. They're going to have a lot more pitchers on staff. I mean, some teams are talking about opening with 16, even more than that, pitchers. So for the first month, it's going to be rough. But after that, limiting the number of pitchers on the roster, I think, is huge, because it makes it harder to do. In addition to the three-batter minimum, pitchers are going to have to throw a little bit longer, which means they probably can't throw quite as hard, which means it might be a little bit easier to hit. And so I think that's the change I'm most looking forward to seeing, because that's something we've been talking about for a while, but the pandemic made it hard to institute. And so I think that's going to have an effect. I'll be interested to see if it actually does.
Do we like the universal DH and the expanded postseason? I'm curious how you guys feel about that, especially with the expanded postseason, with 12 teams, that works out to roughly 40%. I was told to be no math. I use words for a living for a reason. Numbers are not my forte, but I believe that works out to 40%. Do we like these two things?
I actually like the expanded playoffs. The one thing, there are two things specifically that I don't like about it, and I really like the one game wild card. As we were talking about getting baseball to have events, I thought that it was really cool to have specific events. Yankees Red Sox played last year. The Dodgers had won 106 games and could have lost to the Cardinals, who were scorching hot in September. So I like the event of that. But I do understand the idea of, you play 162 games, why are we going to let it come down to one wild card game? At the same time, this goes into the other thing that I'm not particularly a fan of, is the elimination of the play-in game if you're tied after 162 games. So there will be no more game 163. And that is something, again, baseball needs events, and that's one way to create it. I think that it is a good thing, though, if you have an expanded playoffs, and maybe a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 20 years, or in the Phillies case, 10, they have a chance to get in now. I mean, but I was even talking about the Mariners, who nearly made it last year. So this does open the door a little bit for fan bases to get excited, so long as their teams are actually going for it and trying to get to that last spot.
Tom, you want to tackle the DH component?
Yeah, I mean, it's a losing battle, right? I mean, listen, I'm a fan of letter writing, and that's never coming back, right? I mean, things move on, and I get it. I mean, pitchers, a lot of them nowadays, kids are 9 or 10 years old aren't hitting. They become specialized pitchers at that point. So the hitting of pitchers has gotten worse and worse. In general, I'm a huge fan of National League Baseball. It's a much better game. It is chess, and the American League is checkers. And don't try to tell me there's more strategy in the American League, because the pitcher's spot doesn't come around, so it's not as obvious when to hit for your pitcher. That's baloney. There's so much more strategy in the National League game, and we will miss that. Next year, we'll be getting to a more balanced schedule where every team will play every other team. You'll be playing by the same rules. I was a fan of asymmetry. If you didn't like the DH, you had the National League. If you wanted a DH, you had the American League. Now, it's just the same ice cream flavor for everybody.
Yeah, I like this take, Tom, and I want these kids to get off my lawn too, but I guess we're well past that point. This is kind of a downer of an interview where we're just saying all the things that is wrong with baseball.
It's because we're talking about labor.
Yeah, we're talking about labor, all the things that they need to fix. The season is starting. Opening day is here, as people listen to this. So let's go around the horn. Give people a reason why you guys, anything, why you're excited about the season starting and baseball being back.
Have you looked at the top of the Angels batting order? Shohei Ohtani leading off, followed by Mike Trout. I mean, that is amazing. Last year, Trout, Ohtani, Rendon played only 17 games together because of injuries, right? Ohtani just goes off with, I think, the most amazing season in the history of baseball. It can actually be better this year. If you give me a whole year of Ohtani and Trout together, I mean, my goodness. I mean, that's must-see TV. I mean, that to me is the biggest draw in baseball. The Dodgers are the best team, but the most exciting team to watch is going to be that Angels lineup.
They've added guys that could make that team better. And what's better than seeing the most exciting, entertaining team in baseball in the playoffs? I think they got a shot this year. Other thing that I'm really looking forward to is I'm really excited to see Albert Pujols back with the Cardinals. I want to see one more season. I want to see him just face left-handed pitching. And one of my favorite statistical quirks is that Albert Pujols has one fewer stolen base than he has sacrificed flies in his career. I'm looking to see if he can get that stolen base mark over sack flies for his career.
Run, Albert, run.
Yeah, exactly. I'm running for you, Matt.
Yeah, he has not been caught in years. So let's see if this happens.
On the other coast, the one I'm excited to watch is the Blue Jays. And I'm excited for Blue Jays fans that they finally get to watch this team in person for a whole season. You know, because of the pandemic, they were in Dunedin, they were in Buffalo. They've been basically everywhere but Toronto in a way that their fans can be at full capacity in the ballpark to watch. So I think this really fun young team will actually get the home crowd that it deserves. I think it's going to be fun to watch them react to a home crowd reacting to them.
Let's look at the two different leagues before we cut you guys loose. I was at a cookout this weekend. I was talking to a fan from New York, a friend of mine who is a friend despite being from New York, and he's a big Yankees backer, and he was just trashing them. And I was trying to parse whether or not he was just being a New Yorker and complaining or if he has reason to gripe. So in the AL, including the Yankees, who do we like?
Well, I do like the Yankees. I think they're much better defensively, and I think that's going to make their pitching staff a lot better. I really do. And I think they have fewer strikeouts than they had last year, which is going to help. They'll hit their usual number of home runs. So, but that American League East is a bear, man. And I'm with Steph. The Blue Jays, to me, are one of the most fun teams to watch. They swing the bat, and, like, they swing it often. I mean, they get up there hacking. So they're fun to watch. But keep your eye on the Rays. I mean, we spent all this winter, as we usually do, talking about money, and the Mets and the Dodgers are way out in front of everybody in payroll. And they're really good teams. But the Rays somehow get it done, man, and they find a way to, and I think the fact that they got in it for Freddie Freeman a little bit tells me that this team has one move left in them during the course of the season, because they know their window is probably not really big. It's probably closing pretty soon. And if you haven't seen Wander Franco play, my goodness, that guy is amazing. So keep your eye on the Rays, and I would say the Houston Astros, too, are really as good as they were last year, especially Verlander. I saw him pitch in spring training. He looked terrific.
They also have the benefit of a division in which the A's are no longer trying at all. Yeah. And so, the teams in the East, I think, are probably on the whole better than the rest of the league, but they all have to, other than the Orioles, they don't really have an easy road, and the Astros get to play. I mean, the Angels look a lot better, but the Astros and the Central teams have some easier schedules, for sure.
As far as exciting teams go, I am kind of interested in those White Sox still. I am really excited to see a full year of Luis Robert. I think he is a star, and I am ready to see him just feast on some of the lesser pitchers in the American League Central. I also think that you might see a surprisingly good season from the Detroit Tigers. They have a lot of good young players who might be closer than we think to being stars. They have a really good young pitching staff. They just signed Javier Baez, who's always exciting. I am really interested to see how long they can contend. Maybe they're similar to the way the Mariners were last year, in it very, very late into the year. And let's go back to the Mariners one more time. I am really excited in seeing some of those young guys. I want to see Kelenic. He seemed to make adjustments down towards the end of the year. I want to see him put it together. I love Julio Rodriguez. I want to see him. There's a lot of good, at least interesting teams to watch in the American League. And as Tom said, the Yankees are better defensively. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a fun race.
And this is where we should probably throw in our obligatory Phillies reference.
Oh, this is right. Yes. Look at this. You should be hosting the show because I was just about to pivot to this and ask you guys about the NL. Everybody knows the Dodgers are loaded and the defending champs Atlanta let Freeman walk. But I'm wondering what you guys think about the NL. And Tom, I expect that this is where you're going to pump up the Phillies.
Well, I don't know what to make of the Phillies other than they're going to be fun to watch. I mean, they're going to score a ton of runs. If you go up against the Phillies with the back half of your rotation, look out, man. They will just pummel you. But I still don't think they catch the ball well enough to be a postseason team. I really don't. They'll be fun to watch, don't get me wrong. And they'll be a contender. But to really be a playoff team in a tough National League with a really poor defense, that's going to be hard for them to do. But you have to like the Dodgers, though. To me, some things are just too obvious. We're trying to split hairs and look for granular things, who's good, who's not. The Dodgers are loaded, man. And they have a really good farm system, too. They got some players you're going to see in the second half of the season, especially in the pitching staff. So it's hard to go against the chalk with the Dodgers.
I was skeptical about the Giants before I got there, and maybe they're just doing a pretty good job of selling people who show up in person. But I came away thinking, you know what, the Giants have another 100-win season in them, which seems outrageous to say, given how hard it is to win 100 games and sort of the personnel that the Dodgers can roll out.
Yeah, I am interested in the NL West specifically because the Padres could have a reverse year that they had last year. They might start slow. They don't have Tatis for a little while. But if they're still in contention and he comes back, they could make a run for it late. I don't think I'm going to pick them to make the playoffs, but they could make a run towards the end, especially if they play a little more consistent. Their pitching staff doesn't burn out down towards the end of the year. I like the Phillies a lot. I think that they've been so close these last couple of years, and they have gotten better. Tom's right. They will not catch the ball, but they're going to be fun to watch.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. I didn't hear a single thing you guys said about, it's already been deleted, the part where you said the Phillies can't catch and they're in a tough division. All I heard was Tom saying that they'd be fun and they'd be contenders, and we will leave it there. Read them on SI.com and we will have them back on Sports Illustrated Weekly throughout the season. Tom Verducci, Matt Martell, and Stephanie Abstein, thank you so much for this. After a break, we discuss HBO's Lakers series, Winning Time.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Before this season, I thought I was done. Now,
I want this more than anything in a long time.
We're 13 games in. We got lightning in a bottle. The Lakers are the team of the 1980s.
I want to win.
Like a lot of NBA fans, when HBO announced that it would turn a book by Jeff Perlman about the Showtime-era Lakers into a new prestige drama called Winning Time, I was overjoyed. Sex, drugs, and basketball? Yes and please. But while Winning Time has taken some heat for certain treatments, especially the way Jason Clark has portrayed NBA Hall of Famer Jerry West, I've been thinking a lot about what the show gets right and where it goes wrong. So to figure all that out, I enlisted two friends and former coworkers, Ringer TV critic Allison Herman, and NBA analyst Jordan Liggins from the Spinsters podcast. I have gathered us all here today to discuss a show that had a lot of hype around it, a prestige show on HBO with a prominent running slot, and everybody was talking about it, Winning Time, which is about the Lakers Showtime era. So I guess I'll start with this. Allison, you go first. Is the show any good?
I feel like it's almost too early to tell, which is a very weird thing to say about a show that is almost halfway into its highly anticipated first season. It is proceeding at, I think, almost a shockingly leisurely pace for a show about this time period, about this team whose literal philosophy was fast break basketball. So, you know, a lot of very pivotal developments in the history of this period in the Lakers are still in the offing and have yet to happen, and they're still doing a lot of setup. And I think that's contributed to the kind of tepid reception I feel like the show's gotten so far.
Jordan, as a Lakers fan steeped in the history of the franchise, I feel like this should hit a real sweet spot for you. Where do you stand on it?
It does. I finished the last episode, and as soon as the credits rolled, I was like, this is fun. Like, I'm entertained. It's fun to watch. And it, I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not true. I'm Googling the whole time, but the basketball part of it and the entertainment value, the fashion, I'm like, this is a good time. And I think that's what it's supposed to relay, you know, as a viewing, watching experience. As a basketball fan, I think the basketball part and the history, you know, of the franchise and the coaches and trying to pinpoint where in the timeline we are is also fun. But also just on a sit back and watch, I'm like, this is entertainment.
I think I'm in the weird position of almost knowing more of the what's true, what's not of it all than the actual diehard Lakers fan on this podcast, because, you know, I'd like to think I'm a little aware of my blind spots as a critic. So I did not come into this with a lot of basketball knowledge. So I made sure to read the Jeff Perlman book, Showtime, on which the show is based. And comparing the two makes it really interesting because, I mean, I mentioned the pacing. Perlman's book covers 10 whole years, and it becomes very clear over the course of watching this season of TV that it does not plan to get much further than like the calendar year 1979. So it's very weird to kind of hold up the source material against the actual storytelling in this case.
Initially, when the show came out, there was some buzz. Since then, less buzz, but at the beginning there was some buzz, but it was largely negative. And when you're talking about the source material of the book, the characters and the people, the real life people who Perlman writes about, were portrayed in one way in the book and in a decidedly different way in the show. And I'm thinking specifically and mainly about Jason Clark's portrayal of one Jerry West, which is, let's say, aggressive.
Yeah.
Why don't you ask him? While this is the third year straight, I've been begging for a solid four, but he won't buy me Spencer Haywood.
He's too expensive.
Not to mention he attracts a certain element, you know, that whole back to Africa malarkey.
That sound like basketball to you?
It's business, Jerry.
Bingo. Ding, ding. That's what you won't read in your sports pages.
I love Jason Clark. I think he's fun in it. He is intense as hell. I suspect, through various media reports and people I've talked to, the real Jerry West, not exactly thrilled about this portrayal. What have you two made of Jason Clark's performance in that role?
I actually really enjoy it, and I think it's an example of the show actually filling in the gaps of the book in a lot of really helpful ways. The show really makes a meal of the fact that this is like a chronically depressed dude from West Virginia with all that entails, and really makes the most of that. And I think Jason Clark's Jerry West is a good example of that. And I think also the way the show treats Jeannie Buss, who is a 17-year-old, so in real life did not have like a huge pivotal role to play in the Lakers operation at that point in time. But the show really uses her for the emotional impact of, you know, her father's the owner of the team. And so I think like those two performances has really symbolized to me the show trying to avoid what I called in my review the Wikipedia trap, where it's just kind of running back the highlights of stuff we're aware of because it's in the historical record.
Jordan, how do you feel about, I mean, channel Jerry West here. How are you feeling if you're Jerry West watching Jason Clark chew up all the scenery on your behalf?
I'm sure a TV is broken in their house or something, just throwing something at the television. But I found that so interesting, just not knowing a lot about Jerry West personally. But as someone watching, you're like, the logo? The logo is angry all the time. What? Or, you know, going back into his past, a couple episodes, we dive into his family history and also him just losing year after year. I would think you would be angry. So the portrayal makes sense. I think it surprised a lot of people. I'm not surprised that his camp and his family is not so happy with this portrayal, but being able to see this inside look of this envisioned drama version, I love it. Give me all of it.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's great. But as you mentioned, there's been some pushback from his camp, from people around him. Jerry West has been largely silent on this, but a lot of people around Jerry West and other people who have been portrayed have not exactly been thrilled about this. But I want to go through each of the individual performances that stand out. Before I do that, though, I want to bring in our resident Clippers fan, our producer, Isaac Lee. Isaac, you have not seen this show. I suspect I know why. But what is your general feeling on people not being thrilled with this HBO prestige show about your hated rival Los Angeles Lakers?
I see Jordan rolling her eyes right now. I think there are 30 NBA fan bases, and 29 of those fan bases aren't necessarily naturally attracted to a masturbatory celebration of the Los Angeles Lakers glory days. I think that the Lakers have already been celebrated to death. Even me, you know, the hatred of the Los Angeles Lakers is what fuels my daily life and my existence on this planet.
Gets you out of bed in the morning.
And even I wouldn't deny that they are the greatest NBA franchise. Celtics fans would have something to say about that. But I would say, yeah, of course, the Lakers are the greatest franchise in the NBA, one of the most recognizable brands in sports. It's not disputed. So why are we doing this again? Why are we being like, oh, the Lakers are so great. The Lakers are so great. By the way, Jerry West, the logo, now Clippers executive.
Yeah.
Just wanted to point that out.
Now fighting for the enemy. I will tell you though, Isaac, I think you would be pleasantly surprised because you're talking about this show as though it fets and celebrates the Lakers. And I would submit to you that it frequently does not. It does not paint most of these people in the best light, which brings me to, let's run through some of these portrayals and how we feel about the actors and the performances. And you had mentioned the Boston Celtics and whether or not the Boston Celtics are one of the greatest franchises in the NBA history, and they certainly are one of. But what a performance, I think. And we'll start off, Allison, with Michael Chiklis as Red Auerbach, who just, he's got the cigar and the whole bit, and I thought it was delightful.
I think he does a great job. This may be jumping the gun a little bit, but while we're on the subject of the Celtics, I personally feel robbed and deprived and depleted that Bo Burnham, a great tall white man from Massachusetts, is not playing Larry Bird as he was set to at one point in time.
I thought he was.
No disrespect. No. It's a different actor. Okay. And I think the actor they cast actually looks more like the real Larry Bird, but it's like a small dagger in my heart every time he shows up on screen. I do think the Red Auerbach figure is good, although, you know, contrary to your point, he's kind of cast as this like Manichaean, like satanic figure, and Jerry Buss is this David and Goliath hero type.
Jordan, I want to run a couple more past you here. What about Adrian Brody as Pat Riley? Pat Riley, not yet the coach, just trying to like figure out his way in the world.
All I've ever done is work. I worked my whole life. That's all I've done. Day and night, I work.
I was like, okay, Pat Riley wasn't always this stylish fox in the white suit from The Last Dance at all times.
Right?
Like, I love us being able to see the glow up and how he kind of started from the bottom and becomes the Pat Riley that we know. But now he's like gathering tape and filming practices and getting beat up at Venice pickup games. I just love the character, and especially, you know, being a fan and knowing what's to come. It's fun to enjoy the like, oh, I know you're going to be great, but right now you kind of, you don't have a job. You're trying to like pass out resumes and beg people for a job. That's the entertaining part for me, because we know it's going to work out.
Another one for you, Allison. You had mentioned Jeannie Buss. In real life, Jeannie Buss would not have appeared this soon, right? Because Jeannie Buss actually was working on a pro tennis operation for her father at the time. But in the show, they bring her in and incorporate her right from the beginning. So what do you make of what they've done with Jeannie Buss as played by Hadley Robinson?
I really enjoy it because, like I said earlier, I think they use it to talk about the parts of the show that are not just like the X's and O's of like, how did these people form a strategy to win a basketball championship? Like, the show ultimately wants to be behind the scenes and about people. And in fact, has, I would say, like, shockingly little on the court basketball, mm-hmm. potentially because, you know, the people they've cast as Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are amazing, but they are not literally the greatest basketball players of all time. Mm-hmm. But I think what they do with Jeannie is they make her a window into how Jerry Buss, who's this like larger than life womanizing figure, ends up coming across to the people in his life who don't just see the flashy public persona and are kind of aware of the hustling it takes for him to maintain this image and kind of force entry into this elite club of sports owners. And I actually do really like the ambivalence they work in by way of Jeannie Buss towards, you know, part of the Showtime image wasn't just the play on the court. It was the Laker girls and mm-hmm. the Forum Club and all the stuff that went down in the Forum Club that I don't know how much they're going to show on TV, but, you know, it's probably pretty HBO friendly.
Jordan, before we decided to do this recording together, I gave you a prompt. It's the reason I'm watching this show and having such a good time with it. Please talk to me about John C. Reilly as Jerry Buss and his resplendent chest hair.
Resplendent. Yes, I thought you were just talking about the chest hair as a character, that whole setup, sure. Because I really think it is. At one point I was watching, I'm like, why even have on a shirt at this point? The buttons are so low.
Are there buttons?
There's like one button at the bottom. Yeah, two at the bottom. Again, that just goes to the fashion. I'm all about it. I'm all about him, you know, doing a hair tutorial in the middle of an episode about how he slicks it over. And then he jumps in the pool at one point of the training camp and you just see it just turn into a fro and mystify away. But I think we've all heard the story that Will Ferrell was supposed to be in this role of Dr. Buss. And I just don't think that would have worked. I just wouldn't have believed it. This was made for John C. Reilly.
Yes.
Like, it really was made for him.
You're doing a great job. I love all this. Watch it. All right, Claire.
All right.
Keep working on the show. That's what's going to pack him in,
great.
All right?
Yeah.
I got to get this butter off me. I'm going in.
Enjoy.
Tally-ho!
He is funny. It's entertaining. I believe him as this savior of the Lakers. Like, I'm like, yeah, he's going to save the franchise. Let's get, you know, let's go for it.
But not before cocktails and philandering.
Exactly. He is the womanizer. I think it does address the time and how he was different than all these stuffy other owners and executives that were all about basketball. And he did come and bring something different. And I think just as a character, he is everything. And the show is centered around him as it should be.
I mean, speaking of casting that wouldn't have worked, before it was maybe going to be Will Ferrell, it was definitely going to be Michael Shannon, which, like, I cannot imagine Nelson Van Alden, you know, Revolutionary Road himself doing sex symbol, party animal, fun guy, Jerry Buss. And I love John C. Reilly in this role for so many reasons, but I feel like he obviously has incredible range in an actor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever seen him be like sexy and like charismatic in this way. And it really sells the way that he's, you know, obviously unconventional in that way. Like, he wears a hairpiece, he's older, he's this like dude from Wyoming who has a science doctorate but made his money in real estate. But like, he just has this overwhelming star power that makes him able to be BFFs with like a 19-year-old rookie NBA player from mm-hmm. East Lansing, Michigan. And you're like, I totally see how those guys see eye to eye. And yeah, I agree. Just knowing the multiple alternate scenarios, I think we ended up with the best one.
Yes. Absolutely. If this actually did crater the relationship between Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, I'm glad for it. Thank you, John C. Reilly, for ruining their friendship because you've been a revelation.
Yes.
This show, some people will think it's good or bad or unnecessary or whatever. This show is John C. Reilly with his one button, chest hair out, chewing not just all the scenery that he's in, but then all of the rest of the scenery in Los Angeles. And I highly recommend it for that performance alone. I highly recommend reading Allison on The Ringer and listen to Jordan and Haley on Spinsters. My friends, thanks for doing this. After a break, NBA legend Dirk Nowitzki speaks with SI's Howard Beck.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Nowitzki, 5 on the clock. Nowitzki, head fake, falling away. It's good! Dirk Nowitzki knocks it down again!
One of the cool things about working at Sports Illustrated is the access it gives us to big-name athletes. And as part of a recurring segment we've really enjoyed, we've asked a bunch of stars about their first time in SI, including Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, Michael Vick, and a whole bunch of others. And now, SI senior writer Howard Beck conducts that same conversation with none other than NBA legend Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk Nowitzki, do you remember your first time in Sports Illustrated?
I'm not sure whether that was my first time, but I actually have a Sports Illustrated article framed at home. And we were just hitting our stride with the Mavs, with Finley and Nash, and they wrote a little spread on us. And I remember it's actually Sean Bradley is in the air in one of the pictures, and he's contesting a shot, and underneath that, Dirk Nowitzki is playing really well. So we were not that known yet. So I didn't take it personal or anything, but that was one of the first articles that I remember that Sports Illustrated was, you know, having the Mavs on the radar, and that was a big moment for us that we've come a long way.
Do you remember, was that your rookie season or a couple of years in?
That must have been a couple of years in, because obviously my rookie year, we didn't really play that well. So it must have been my second or third year when we were starting to get better and making the playoffs for the first time.
Do you remember when SI first wrote about you specifically?
I don't remember that, no.
Because that one that. We found here, January 2000, story by John Wertheim.
Okay.
It talks about you missing home. It describes Würzburg, which I'm not pronouncing correctly. Say it for me.
Würzburg.
Thank you. I could not pull that off. And talking about you missing home, mm-hmm. and talking about your hometown, and talking about the fact that after a shaky rookie season, though, Dirk Nowitzki is kind of starting to find his footing. You're averaging 18 points a game at that moment. You're starting to break out. Do you remember anything about this one?
I don't, but it sounds good. I can't believe John has been around this long. Huh? That's sweet. And I don't remember that article, though.
That is the head. Fast developing after a rookie year in which the negatives prevailed, the Mavericks' Dirk Nowitzki looks like a budding star.
Oh, sounds amazing. No, not the cover. Not the cover.
But it's Antonio Davis is praising you, saying he sure is something, isn't he? Shooting, passing, rebounding, he can do it all. And he's big. I'm surprised because we didn't know much about him. People forget back in the day when you came in, like a European player comes over, even if they're tagged for stardom, we don't know anything about him. There's no YouTube.
Yeah.
So you were a mystery.
Yeah, for sure. They found me somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, it was a hard time to get going there at the beginning. So my second year was a lot better. But my rookie year, that was the lockout year, 98-99. Oof, that was a super tough season. So I'm glad in my second year it kind of helped and broke through a little bit.
Did it mean something to you at that moment in your early career to kind of start to get that national recognition from SI or wherever?
Well, old Nels, the coach, said before my rookie year, he said, I'm going to be rookie of the year. So I got a lot more national attention than I actually wanted my first year. And so that put a lot of pressure on. But in my second year, I was able to calm down and have some good games. And that was good. Put me on the radar for sure.
So Wertheim set the scene in a way about who you were at that time, in the sense that you were just, displaced from home. You're halfway around the world, missing home, and still trying to find your footing. How would you describe who you were at the moment that story pops in January of 2000, early in your second season?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough time, but I was just starting to play better. I think my second year was a little fortunate. We had a power forward, and his name was Gary Trent, and he was playing really well. I'm not sure if you remember him. He was a beast. And he tore his hamstring in training camp, and so he missed that entire season. So really, I was the only power forward on the roster, and I literally played 30-35 minutes my second year already, and I think that helped me a lot, settle in, get used to the style of play. And so I was in a way better place in January of 2000 than I was in ever at any point in my rookie year, and I was starting to fill out a little bit. My body was more ready for it, so I think I was well on my way in January 2000. So that was I was definitely heading the right way.
The story makes reference to the idea that you were fast eclipsing Detlef Schrempf as the best basketball export from Germany. Were you feeling any of that at the time? And did you, once you start to find your way in the NBA, are you starting to realize, not that you could predict what the next 18 years or whatever are going to do for you, or how they're going to unfold, the stardom that will come, but did you feel that was possible at that moment? Did you start to see it?
I mean, a little bit. I think at the end of my first year, I had a couple of good games, and I think that showed me, hey, if you work hard and you put in all the work, that you can make it in this league. Obviously, I didn't think then it was going to be a 21-year career or, winning a championship and all the accolades, obviously, that came with that. I was just trying to, make it in the league, make it past the rookie deal, and establish myself with Steve and Mike, as put the Dallas Mavericks back on the map, since in the 90s they were a little bit of the laughing stock. So I think that's really what I was focusing on there: get better, establish myself, and put Dallas back on the map. And I wasn't really sure where this would lead, but I know if I worked hard, I can have a future in this league.
and that you might one day be better than Detlef Schrempf.
Well, I don't, you know, Detlef had a great career, as you know, and he's a good friend of mine. And he was so nice to me at the beginning when I first met him, and I kind of wanted to be my mentor. And so I owe him a lot. He's a great dude, and I respect him a lot.
Thanks to Dirk Nowitzki and Howard Beck. You can read Howard on SI.com and be sure to listen to him on the Crossover podcast. We'll have links in our show notes. Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Cooper McKim, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producer is Dan Bloom. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. Thanks for listening, and if you stuck around this long, we leave you with this. We will save the best for last with one John C. Reilly, and a discussion of his chest hair will ensue. So
perfect.
About an hour on that chest hair alone. And everything else will be real, real brief.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.